The mountains are calling. Let's escape the noise. This is episode 71 of the Just Trek podcast. Welcome to the Just Trek podcast, where elevation is our recreation. This is your host, Justin Just Rock Ramon, coming to you from Los Angeles. On this show, you will hear stories and adventures from inspirational hikers, explorers, weekend warriors, to even creatives in the LA community and beyond. Join the Just Trek crew on our journey to True North. We aim to inspire, motivate, and elevate you to a higher state of well-being. You can follow us on Instagram at just.trek, facebook.com/justtrekofficial, and our website justtrek.net. Just Trek crew, what it do? This is your host, Just Rock, and on this episode, my special guest goes by the name Brett Patrontash, aka Summit Shuffler. He is a SoCal-based trekker, peak bagger, mountaineer, and is most importantly, a fellow mountain dancer. This conversation was recorded on top of Cahuenga Peak, nearby the iconic Wisdom Tree within Griffith Park. There is a full video version of this episode on our YouTube channel if you would like to check it out as well. We chat about his first hiking memories, top trails in California, hiking hacks and tips, his Los Angeles dance journey, Summit Shuffle dancing and climbing iconic peaks such as Mount Whitney and the Matterhorn, how dancing and climbing both fulfill him, the Pacific Northwest versus Southern California outdoor scene, his most dangerous on-trail experience, how scaling mountains has impacted his overall life, and the one outdoor experience he would relive all over again. Here's our conversation, and I really hope you enjoy because I carried 30 pounds of equipment up to the peak for this all to happen. This episode is brought to you by Cotopaxi. Cotopaxi is an outdoor apparel brand known for their high-quality outdoor essentials. They create sustainable products to fight extreme poverty, inspire adventure, and move people to do good. Their social impact strategy focuses on global poverty alleviation, and they strive to employ responsible sourcing and manufacturing practices throughout their supply chains. So much good going on with this company that I absolutely love, so make sure to check them out more on Cotopaxi.com, and if you are local to Los Angeles, definitely give their brand new LA store a visit. It is located in El Segundo at The Point. The Just Trek podcast is recorded on Gabrielino Tongva land. The natives and indigenous people are not a thing of the past. They are present among us right here, right now. So let's keep educating ourselves and take the opportunity sometime to interact and learn from them. It's important to fill ourselves with more knowledge so we can become better outdoor stewards in our journey alongside Mother Nature and in the public lands we explore. Before we jump into the conversation, I want to let you know that the Just Trek merch store is officially live right now. If you would like to support my podcast journey and represent Just Trek on your adventures, please make sure to check out justtrek.net/shop. That is justtrek.net/shop. We currently have new merch available for purchase. I appreciate you all so much, and now let's get back to the show. What's going on, everyone? We have a very special guest right next to me, and we're out here in Cahuenga Peak, nearby the iconic Wisdom Tree. This area is still part of Griffith Park, which is also part of the Santa Monica mountain range. But to bring it back to my guest over here, he is quite the standout of an outdoor adventurer. He goes by the name Brett Patrontash, aka Summit Shuffler. Brett is a SoCal-based trekker, peak bagger, mountaineer, and mountain dancer. And without further ado, welcome to the Just Trek podcast, Brett.
What's going on, Justin? It's a pleasure to be here. Excited to be at the podcast with you here on the summit, where I like it.
We earned getting up here to record this podcast with one another. We're on a ridgeline right now. Look at the backdrop. We got Mount Baldy snow-capped. It's still like late spring. Like, this is a pretty cool setting to do this.
It's a beautiful day. I can't believe how much snow is still on Baldy. We got it in the backdrop here. Everything's looking nice.
And for those of you not familiar, Mount Baldy is the tallest mountain in LA County. I consider it our local Mount Everest. It stands at 10,064 feet. And it's a true mountaineer training when there is snow on it, such as right now, which is, I know Brett has actually done several chute climbs up there, right?
Yeah, I love climbing up Mount Baldy and summit shuffling up there. I've been summit shuffling up there about five times.
Five times?
Yeah. It's my favorite place to go and train in the LA County area. Get up there, bring my gear, and kick some moves.
Yeah, I remember when when your content first started popping up into my feed, I was like, who is this guy? Like, all over Mount Baldy, like, I dance too on, like, the different summits, but your, like, content was just so, like, dramatic and captivating because of the drone capture, so I was like, I got to meet this guy, and I got to get him on the pod, and now, look, we're here right now making it happen.
Here we are. Yeah, let's get it. You know, when we first met, I didn't know you were a breaker, so the fact that you're a good dancer, too, makes this that much more intriguing.
Oh, yeah, this is a meeting of the mountain dancer minds.
Yeah.
This is a
really...
This is a pretty rare, collaboration to have two dancers who are also, like, outdoor adventurers, peak baggers, and just, like, nature lovers. And like what you just said, what's so rad about doing this pod with you now is I just recently met you for the first time in person over the weekend for the four-year anniversary of the Just Trek podcast.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize you were going to attend the event. I know I invited you, but so much was going on that day. So when I saw your face, I got so excited. I know we took a bunch of pictures, but how did you enjoy the event? And what did you just think of the live podcast panel and the vibes?
Such a good event, such a good podcast, and a great group of panelists that you had there. So congrats on the 4th year anniversary for Just Trek. It was great to meet a lot of Southern California hikers that day too. Some people that I follow online already
yes.
that I got to finally meet in person, yourself included, right? That's where we met. So I thought it was a lot of fun, and everyone seemed to be smiling and dancing and having a good time.
Yeah, it was really rad to see some of my friends who follow you, and they're like, is that the shuffler guy? I'm like, that's him. Go say hi to him before he leaves. Because I think it was Spontaneous Jax, somebody that follows you, I Am Oneness, and a handful of other people.
Met Tomasa,
right?
Met Vic, met a whole bunch of people. It was so great to kind of see all these people in person. And there's just such a good Southern California and Just Trek climbing and hiking community that it's pretty unique and pretty special. So it was great to put a face to a lot of these names.
Yeah, because oftentimes, you know, we put out this content, but we're not necessarily meeting people in the community. So it was really wonderful to see you, like, immerse yourself. Because I think you mentioned, you've made friends in the dance community, maybe some climbers and hikers here and there, but not so much. You haven't had the opportunity to, like, meet other SoCal hikers, SoCal climbers, right?
Yeah, not in person, mostly just online and in, you know, those communities. So it was great to see people in person. You know, hopefully we'll get a chance to make it to some summits soon. I run into people at the summits. So that's kind of, it's always fun. Mount Baldy's always a party on a Saturday morning. So you never know who you're going to find up there on a Saturday morning. But yeah, it was good. It was a great event.
Yeah, Mount Baldy is an amazing place to meet people at the summit. I always feel like everyone's really opens themselves up there. Like, oh, I recognize you from this content. You're that dancer. Or you're that climber. Like, it really is like a social summit thing up there.
It's the spot. You got to be up there.
It is. It really is. All right, so check it out, Brett. Before we get into all your outdoor adventures, you know, I want to learn more about your outdoor journey and just dig deeper into that. So I want you to take us back.
Okay.
What was your first hiking memory?
First hiking memory? Well, I think to take it even like further back than that, I grew up in Ottawa, Canada. And, you know, out there, the mountains aren't quite as large as they are here on the West Coast. So I grew up skiing and snowboarding. So I started snowboarding when I was probably, I don't know, like 10 or 12. I started skiing when I was 4.
Oh, wow.
And so I loved mountains, you know, and in Ottawa, Canada, that's kind of what you do in the winter. You get out there, you ski and snowboard on the weekends. And then when I moved out to Seattle, that's when I really first started getting involved in mountain climbing and hiking a lot more. And I remember looking up, so we would go snowboard near Mount Baker a lot. And I remember looking up at Mount Baker and saying, it'd be really cool to try to go up there. And that's probably what got me really into mountaineering in the first place.
And Mount Baker, correct me if I'm wrong, that's a 14,000 foot peak, correct?
Mount Baker is 10,781, and Mount Rainier is 14,400.
Oh, Mount Rainier. Yeah, Mount Rainier is that one that you see from the city and you're like, oh my God, like, how is this? Is this real? You know?
And that's kind of how the progression begins, because you start with something like Mount Baker and then you're going into the city every day and you're just looking up at Mount Rainier from the city every day. And you got some great climbing groups out there like Alpine Ascents. That's kind of who I went up with to go up Mount Baker and Mount Rainier. And you know, then before you know it, you're step by step getting more and more into the sport.
So the whole like spark for the mountaineering thing really like was rooted when you're already in Ottawa, Canada, when you're skiing and snowboarding, but it really took fruition when you moved to Seattle.
I'd say that's right, yeah, because I was mostly into skiing, snowboarding, and maybe a bit of, getting out of trail and doing some backcountry when you can on a snowboard, but it wasn't until I moved to Seattle that I really started hiking and climbing quite a lot more.
And why did you make the move from Ottawa, Canada to the U.S., specifically Seattle?
Well, that was for work, yeah. Okay. We had an opportunity to move out to Seattle and get started there, and so I moved out there, and that was the main reason.
And I've lived in Seattle for a year, and I would say it's one of my top five favorite cities in the country. Like, what do you think of just the Seattle city and the landscapes out there? Like, what was your first impressions of it?
Seattle is gorgeous, and especially when it's not raining. You know, it's
true.
Like Seattle, I remember being there. I got there in the winter in January, and the first couple days it was all rain and cloud. And I remember driving through the city when the first day the sun shone through, and it was just like jaw-dropping, like to realize this valley that you're in with snow-capped peaks in the distance, and you got Mount Rainier, and you got Mount Baker, and you got this beautiful city in the sound, on the water, and then these mountains in the background. So it's the Pacific Northwest is a very special place, you know, quite an incredible amount of nature out there.
I would even go to say, aside from the mountains and the nature landscapes, like in the summer, oh my God, the summers in Seattle are like some of the best summers I've experienced anywhere in the country ever. Would you agree to some extent?
Summer can be fun for me because of the nature. You know, that's the time of the year to get out there. You know, you got from April and May all the way through to September to get out in the outdoors, do some fun stuff. It's beautiful in the evening. There's lots of water activities you can do, lots of trails that you can go hit. It's a pretty fun place.
And what's so striking in the summer in Seattle or the Pacific Northwest, there's light until like 10, 11 p.m. and you're like, where am I right now, you know?
It stays out late. Yeah, the sun stays out there for sure.
And are you able to like pinpoint a moment, or maybe it was a series of moments, when you knew that just like getting outside and hiking would become like a really big part of like your lifestyle moving forward? Or would you just, because the way you described it sounded like you kind of grew up in it with like the extreme winter sports such as skiing and snowboarding. But are you able to pinpoint any particular moments on trail or a specific outdoor adventure?
Well, I don't know if there was a specific point when I realized that hiking and climbing would become a major part of my life. I kind of just slow and steady kept doing it a little bit more and more. And you do one thing and then you take a break for a bit and you do another thing. And you're like, before you know it, you start saying, okay, I want to go do a few more things. Honestly, it's probably the summit shuffling that made me commit all in to being like, all right, I'm going to get out there and hit a lot of peaks. Because once I set out on that journey, then I had a bit more purpose in my climbing and mountain dancing, whereas before that it was, you know, kind of just go have some fun and do it. And now I'm like, all right, what am I going to do next? Where am I going? What's the plan? So it's probably when I committed to summit shuffling is when it became a larger piece, both the dancing and the climbing.
And this summit shuffling, how long have you been doing it now?
I've been summit shuffling for almost 2 years now. So this summer will be 2 years in June. And it's a funny story, actually. I always liked dancing a little bit, you know, and I was at my friend Mike's wedding in Ottawa, Canada, summer, like May 2022, and I was tearing it up on the dance floor, you know, I had some moves, I felt good, and then I got back, and I was like, I found the opportunity to go to this beginner shuffle class, so I went to that, and I was like, hey, this is kind of fun, and I happened to be climbing Mount Whitney 3 weeks later, and I kind of put it all together and said, is there a way maybe I could go climb Mount Whitney and take what I've just learned and film a fun dance video at the top of Mount Whitney?
That's awesome.
So I wanted to know if that was possible, and I went and did that, and then the Summit Shuffler was born.
Summit Shuffler was born. And for the listeners who may not be familiar with the style of shuffle dance, like how would you describe it?
Shuffle dancing is a type of dancing that you do to electronic music, dance music, house music. And it's just high BPM, so beats per minute, and you're just kind of really letting that energy flow. It's fast, and I guess it's defined by a couple key moves. You have the running man, you have the T-step.
Yep.
And these are kind of on the spot, kind of makes it look like you're running on the spot, but you add some swag to it, you add some flow, you kick some T-steps, and then a lot of the rest of the technique builds from there. So that's kind of the type of music that it is.
I love it because it's like there's a whole vocabulary to like the summit shuffling, and as you like have become familiar, like my background before I was a hiker or just this outdoor enthusiast was I was a b-boy, a breakdancer in that community I've been in that community since like 2003.
Yep.
So a very long time. So I know that shuffling has come around, you know, within the dance world, maybe over the past like more like the past like 5 to 10 years, right? It's really hit the mainstream more?
Well, you know, it's been around since the 70s or 80s, starting in the UK.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah, but it was more like house and more underground, and I'd say there's definitely been an explosion of it in the last 10 years. Yeah, absolutely.
I think what I love about the shuffle dancing especially is the music behind it. I love house music. I actually feel like I dance better to house music than break beats or hip hop music. Like, there's something about house music that, like, you just let the music take over you.
It's that deep, those bass lines that just get into your soul, and you're just like, boom, 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 you know?
And then when you mix it on top of a mountain or just out in nature, like, how does it make you feel when you fuse both of them?
I love that feeling of being at the summit and kicking it. You kind of internalize, you know, you put your sunglasses on, you put your headphones on, you get into your own world and your headspace, and then you're just like, you kind of summon, you take that deep breath, you summon the power of the summit, and you're just like, let the bass drop, and it's just like, go.
Yeah, you have to, like, also, like, mentally get into this, like, character, into this zone in order to, you know, perform.
Yep.
Because it's not like, yes, we can turn it on, but, like, we have a process of how we sometimes get into, like, our summit ciphers or summit shuffles, summit breakdancing. I know you do a few things right before you take action to shuffle dance. Can you share some of that?
Yeah, sometimes I'll do some yoga. Sometimes I'll stretch. Actually, I'll always stretch. Mm-hmm. I've gone summit shuffling where I haven't done a full stretch because it's been a condensed time frame, and I've felt that afterwards my performance would have been better, my zone would have been better, my movement would have been better if I had stretched well.
Oh, for sure.
So I think just giving it a good stretch, warming up, some jumping jacks, some exercise, and then, like, you know, a couple warm-up moves, and then get into it.
Yeah, because, you know, if we just jump into it, that's how we get injured. And after a long day of climbing, like, that's the last thing we want to deal with, going down the mountain, like, injured. It's already going to take us long enough to get off, like, a Mount Baldy.
That's it. Like, 10 minutes of stretching at the summit is going to save you that rolled ankle. So I'd say it's always worth it to stretch at the summit, for sure.
So I know I can riff-raff with you about the whole dance journey, and we're going to get more into it because I definitely want to talk more about your Mount Whitney, the Summit Shuffle anniversary. But at the moment, you know, on this show, I always love for, like, our listeners to discover new places to explore, to check out that our guests have done and get inspired by. And you've done a ton of trekking and exploring, not in just in SoCal, but you're from Ottawa, Canada. I've seen a lot of your mountaineering trips all over the world, over the country. But, you know, you've been living in California for a few years now. So let's make it contextual for California at the moment. What would you say are your top three mountains in California right now, and why?
You know, I'm a man of consistency and repeatability here, and my top three that I'll hit, and this is probably mostly what I hit, is Mount Baldy's number one, top favorite in Southern California. Number two is Mount Whitney, and number three is Cowanga Peak, what we're on right now. This whole ridgeline, actually. There you go, man. This whole ridgeline, and the reason for those three is very strategic and, like, fun. Baldy is just fantastic. It's a fantastic mountain. It's really a gem. It's incredible alpine training. It's a very real mountain. You got to start early in the day. If you're going to be doing the bowl in the winter, it's pretty steep. You got to get off that snow by 8:30, 9 a.m. So you got to really, you know, get out there and get started at the right time of day. You know, and it's a full climb. It's 4,000 feet of gain. It's fun up there. There's a lot of people up there. So Mount Baldy is just the perfect long day, single day alpine training. And then Mount Whitney is a big mountain, you know, 14.5. It's the highest point in the U.S. mainland. It's a great objective. It's a hard summit shuffle objective because it's 6,000 feet of gain if you're going to do it in one push. The two times that I've done it was 6,000 feet of gain in one push. And the last time I did it, I'm like, if I do this again, I'm camping. I'm not. I'm going to bump up 4,000 feet, sleep, and then take 2,000, hit the shuffle, and come down because it was super hard. Super hard to hit 6,000 in a day.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, 22 miles in one day is going to destroy your body and mind and your soul for a lot of people.
It's a push. It's a slog, and we'll get to that. But then, and then this mountain and hillside and ridgeline here, I just love it because of the access. It's so local. I live in Hollywood, so to be able to come here and just, you know, in a 15-minute drive, be at the trailhead here, go up, you can session at the Wisdom Tree, you can get 360 shots here of some choreos or cypher sessions here, and they have this sick ridge that's halfway from here to the back of the Hollywood sign, and I'll bring my ice axe up there sometime and just practice, like, T-step traveling that ridge and get, just for those cases where you get to, like, larger mountains where you have a tight ridgeline at the top, you got to practice for the ridgeline. So this is, like, fantastic mountain training. You got Mount Baldy, which is a real exercise day, and then you got Mount Whitney, which is a really fun objective.
I love all three of those choices, and I love that we're doing this video podcast on Cahuenga Peak. Like, we're on a part of a ridge that's very isolated, much more peaceful. And also it's kind of rugged. You know, this is more of the rugged and wild side of Griffith Park. We're not near the observatory where there's like tourists everywhere. Mm. Like this part of Hollywood, this part of the Wisdom Tree is truly special because
it's not paved. You know what I mean? There's no road to get right here, and that's what makes it great. You just get trail runners and hikers and people coming up here, and the 360 views from Cahuenga Peak are like pretty unreal. You got the city, you got Mount Baldy, you got the ocean, mm-hmm. you got Long Beach, you can see everything.
You got the Lake Hollywood here. Reservoir too, where you're like, whoa, I didn't even know there was a lake up here.
I know, yeah. Totally.
Thanks, Brett, for sharing your top three in California. Let's recap that real quick. You said Cahuenga Peak, where we're currently at right now. It's right next to the Wisdom Tree, also in between the Hollywood sign. And then you said Mount Baldy, our dear Mount Baldy.
Yeah, represent.
SoCal hiker rite of passage. I always love it every time everyone says Mount Baldy as a favorite because it's really hard to beat it. It's a real true peak, 10,000 feet tall, 10,064 feet. So many routes to do it. You can do it as a mountaineer. You can do it as a peak bagger, as a trail runner. You can remix the routes. You can go up the Devil's Backbone. You can do Bear Canyon. You can even do Register Ridge, which not a lot of people know about. There's so many ways to remix the route in that just general area, because also that general area has like other peaks, Cucamonga, Ontario, the three T's. So it really is like a peak bagger's paradise out there if you connect everything.
For sure. I haven't done it yet. I've seen some of those like 11 peak missions in like 20, you know, in like 18 hours or whatever. I still haven't done one of those. So maybe one day.
Yeah. The
11 peak summer shuffle. That'd be a lot. Go hit Running Man's at all of them. I don't know if I could do it.
Okay. So if the event happens this year or next year, I'm going to make you join the Fool's Traverse Challenge.
That's the one. Fool's Traverse. Yeah.
My buddy who was actually a guest on this podcast, RJ Saria. Shout out to you, founder of Traverse Outdoors, and his partner, Jeremy Boggs. It's an 11 peak endurance challenge, a beautiful suffer fest.
Go hit Running Man's at each one. That would be like, oh my God, the energy would be so fatigued.
They were actually encouraging participants to dance on the peaks for extra points to win more prizes from sponsors.
Well, hey.
So you're like the right man for the job.
Might have to go get some of those dance move points.
And then your last one you mentioned was Mount Whitney. What's so special about Mount Whitney is that it's in the Eastern Sierras, and that is California's prized mountain range. And I think what's so shocking is that it's only 4 hours north of Los Angeles. I would just have thought a mountain like that is like 10 hours away from LA County.
Honestly,
right?
It's like three. You get there in 3 hours.
I don't know how fast you're driving,
I
man.
I mean, speed limits, but
150 miles an hour.
Three and a quarter, we'll say.
Yeah, that's a great three. Yeah, Mount Whitney, my goodness, that is a spiritual. No matter if you do it as an overnight backpacking day hike, it is a spiritual kind of trek to do that. I agree.
I agree, especially when you're looking up there from like Lone Pine and you're grabbing mm-hmm. a sandwich before you head up to Whitney Portal and you're just like, that looks pretty high up.
You're like, yeah, and the jagged, cracky ridges and they just look so dramatic up there, especially on
and
the backside.
It's so far back. It's like so far mm-hmm. back from that view that you're like, is that it? You're like, oh, okay, that's a far ways away.
You remember after the 99 switchbacks and when you hit Trail Crest? And you see that back view, like, what did you think of that?
My thought was, we got 2 miles more. I mean, this is like, yeah, I thought we were done. I thought we made it to the top of the switchbacks and we're good, but you're not. You got another hour in you, or however long it takes you to get, maybe longer, to get up to the summit. So, but it is a nice reprieve to be off the switchbacks. And it's fun to be on that ridge. It's like, you can see all the needles and you can see it and you're just kind of, probably depends on your energy level at that point, how fun you're feeling or not, but. It's a pretty place for sure.
Yeah, that's when my jaw dropped. I was like, oh my God, there's these alpine glacier lakes below. The needles are so like.
And I've hit one of them. I hit, what's it called? Mount Muir. So Mount Muir you can get from the backside. And I went up there with two climbers that I met the first time I did it. And they were going and they're like, you want to come? I was like, all right. We met at 5 a.m. I think once day broke at the trail camp. Mm-hmm. And then by the time we made the switchbacks, they said they were going off that way. So I went up with them and the three of us summited Mount Muir and like, That was super fun rock scramble.
I'm so jealous because I've known about Mount Muir for several years, but I know it's an offshoot off a Trail Crest. And like that mini scramble to the top is pretty like, it's not really a summit. There's not much room, right?
It's a little path. And I mean, it's like rock climbing. It's like I think it's a class 3 rock scramble, class 3, but it feels like you're climbing a lot. And there's a couple moves and then you get up there and it's just a couple big rocks stacked on each other. There's a big rock at the top of the summit register jammed in it. And you're like, you can barely fit three people up there, but And then you look over. And then the best is once you get back down off the ridge at the end of the day and you look back at Mount Muir and you're like, wow, okay, that looks cool.
It's impressive, right?
Yeah. Because Whitney has this super long kind of like way to get back there, but Muir from trail camp looks like super exposed and super high up there and prominent. And I remember thinking that was pretty cool.
That's so rad that you did that. Yeah, definitely when I go back to the Mount Whitney.
Didn't summit
area.
Shuffle it though. That was just too unsafe.
Yeah, summit shuffling on a needle like ledge doesn't seem too safe.
Unless you're roped up, but we didn't have that. That came later. I was still not summit shuffling on rope when we did that. That was my first summit shuffle. That was my first Mount Whitney summit shuffle was the day we hit Mount Muir, and then I went and hit my very first summit shuffle.
And was that your first summit of Whitney too?
Yeah.
Wow, a lot of firsts for you that day.
That's what summit shuffling's all about. Wow. Just like how many firsts can you push in any climb?
Oh, spoken like a true outdoor adventurer. I love it.
Like a peak bagger.
And I like that you brought up being roped in, because right now I actually want to transport us out of the U.S. and head out to Western Europe, but specifically go over to France and head over to the Agua. How do you pronounce it? Agua?
Agui de Crochu.
Oh my God, I butchered that so bad. The Agui Crochu.
Yep.
And that is in France. And I think that was one of the most jaw-dropping pieces of content I've ever seen in the outdoors, period.
Thank you. Thank you.
Because for the people who may not have seen this godly video, this gentleman here, Brett, was roped up to another mountaineer. And the space that you were dancing on, my friend, I was like, what is he doing? Like, and he has the choreo down, he's turning, he's making circles, he's doing certain like specific dance moves. I'm like, wow, he actually trained not only to do the mountain, but specifically to do this specific summit shuffle dance. And for people not familiar, also myself, that specific mountain, what's the claim to fame of it? I know it's like a pretty notable one out there in Europe.
Well, Agui de Crochu is like part of a mountain ridge that sits right across from Mont Blanc, which is like the biggest one in Chamonix there. And the village is Chamonix, and they have the Agui de Midi, which is just beautiful. It's like you take a tramway up from 3,000 feet to about, I don't know, like 11 or 12,000 feet, something like that, to the Agui de Midi. And then from there, you're just in this like high alpine basin where you can go down and do rock climbing, come back up and hit all these other things. The next day we went and hit the Traverse to Point La Chenelle, which was another epic day of the training. And all of this was to build towards the Matterhorn climb, which was like 3 days of training in Chamonix to then go do Matterhorn. But the Agui de Crochu, I mean, that was like, you know, you always get just a bit of beginner's luck. It's like, that was our first day that I met up with my mountain guide, Chris, and we were having a lot of fun. And we had some skill development and testing to do with this summit shuffling before, you know, he would agree to take me up the Matterhorn
the prep,
and try
right?
this.
Yeah.
And so that was a big test day, and we got up there and we knocked it out. It was great.
So I'm curious, like, how did you even have the thought to do this mountain and summit shuffle that? Like, was it something you saw in a piece of content, or is it more like someone told you to do it? Like, how did you even have that idea first off to test it out there?
Honestly, that was Chris Erickson, who was my mountain guide for the week in Chamonix and in Zermatt when we went up to do the Matterhorn. That was just on his itinerary. You know,
I told him
what we were gonna. I called him up and I was like, "Can you take me up the Matterhorn to you know, to do some summit shuffling?" And he was open to it, but there was, you know, we had to prep for it. So we got to get you want to climb for a few days first and then get ready to go up the Matterhorn. Make sure our technique is good, our shuffling technique, our climbing technique, all that. And I had spoke to a couple other guides who were like, didn't even want to, you know, take me up there for that type of project.
They're liability.
Like, yeah, they're like, I don't know. But Chris was cool. He was open to it. He's like, but you know, we had to prove it first. So we put an itinerary together that included a couple days of climbing and shuffling. And it was just like every day we'd wake up, we'd leave Chamonix, we'd go, we'd hit a objective. Day one was Agui de Crochu. Day two was Traverse to Point La Chenelle. And then we were supposed to be actually climbing Matterhorn at the end of that week, after another 3-4 days of climbing, but the weather changed. And at the end of our second day, we had to pull the audible to say, we got to beat this weather window. And we decided to go for Zermatt the next day. But we just had two epic days climbing and prepping already and trying anchor techniques, short rope techniques, spin techniques, when to spin, when to not spin, when to fall, when to not fall, how to fall if you're going to take a fall. And we came up with a couple key rules, which are basically for the Matterhorn, no spins, no trips, and no fall. Don't fall. No fall.
Nada.
So.
to go back to the Agui Crochu.
Yeah.
I got it now, see? Was that your first time doing a summit shuffle dance belayed into a rope?
Yes. Yeah, that was the first time I was roped up for some shuffling.
And how did that feel to be on the edge of the cliff, roped up, doing summit shuffling dancing?
Honestly, incredible. It was just like, as soon as I was anchored in and I looked down and you're highly exposed and you're just like, got this little rock, but you feel so safe because you're anchored and roped up. So if you fall, you're going to like maybe hurt yourself a little, but you're not going to fall off the mountain ideally. And it's like, sick, let's dance, you know, and that feeling of exposure sets in and just adds to the adrenaline rush of the summit shuffle. And then I was the hard part is you're always dancing. If it's rock is best, rock's the, like the best for summit shuffling versus dirt or snow or ice or whatever. But it's always slightly slanted, and that rock was like a little bit, couple deep rocks pieced together. So you had to find your footing. But once I found my footing, it was pretty danceable. And I was just like, this is incredible.
Everybody tuning in, look at his Instagram feed. I think it's one of the pinned posts.
Yes. Yeah.
It's quite the visual where like you're like, how is this possible? Oh, he's roped in, but still it's like, just to have like the guts and the courage to even like not just freak out a little bit, you know, is it's pretty damn impressive, because I could only imagine like you probably felt like a spiritual dancing mountain goat up there, because you're the surface area that you're dancing on is very, very minimal, like you said. That's why there was restrictions on certain moves that you could even be allowed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you got a rope, you got to spin around it, and you got it. There's a lot of, so I loved it. You know, it's funny. It's like summit shuffling has so many different flavors. It's like you got your energy bars, you got like four different flavors you like. There's like multiple flavors of summit shuffling. And it's funny because that was a relatively easy rock climb. That was not a super complex climbing day. And the summit shuffle itself, like I had a lot of energy. I was up there, we climbed for maybe an hour or two. We got up there, we're practicing, we're kicking it, but it shot so well, you know? Whereas like the Matterhorn was an intensive athletic endeavor. Oof. And it shot well too, but like it's something about those like almost easier climbing days, exposed rock where you can see the exposure, that just hits hard. And then you got your big mountain objectives like Matterhorn or Pico d'Orizaba, and you want to kind of keep trying to escalate in the elevation from there, which is another big goal. So there's all sorts of flavors that you can hit when you're trying to film some summit shuffle content.
Let's talk about Matterhorn, because that's definitely like one of the most iconic, visually stunning mountains in the world, right? I think it's the most photographed mountain in the world, like due to its pyramid shape.
I believe it. Yeah, it's pretty well known.
Yeah,
it's to climbers and non-climbers alike.
And just to give context for the listeners, where exactly is the Matterhorn?
The Matterhorn is in Zermatt, Switzerland.
Yeah, Switzerland has those really dramatic.
Yeah, the Swiss Alps are great.
Swiss Alps, yeah.
The you know, Chamonix and Zermatt are like also uniquely different from each other, but that was the first time I'd ever been there, and I got a nice flavor of both of them, and it was just a really incredible experience.
And how did you have the thought to do it at Matterhorn, especially the summit shuffling? Was that just always in your mind, or?
I just wanted to dance that ridge. I was like, well, actually, that's not exactly how it happened. So I had been thinking of climbing the Matterhorn and actually training for climbing the Matterhorn before I started summit shuffling. So
I see.
What I did was, when I was living in Seattle, I climbed Mount Baker and Mount Rainier with alpine ascents. And then after that, it's kind of like, hey, what do you do after Mount Rainier for like a beginner mountaineer? You want to get out there, you want to do more. And you can either kind of go towards more elevation or more technical climbing. And so after that, in the summer of, I forget which summer it was, but I took then things slowed down for COVID for a little. And then when it picked back up, I took an alpine rock climbing course, which was 4 days of more like 5.6 to 5.8, just like intro to rock climbing and alpine climbing and multi-pitch and all that. And I did that with the intent of like getting through that so I could be prepped to climb the Matterhorn. And this was before I started summit shuffling.
Okay.
Or was it? No,
it's all fused in
right
now.
It was
the same time.
I did it right. It was the summer after I started summit shuffling. It was like August, the year that I started. But the idea to then do that and do the Matterhorn had started before I had started summit shuffling.
Okay, now I understand like the thought process behind it.
Yeah.
And from that Matterhorn climb, is there any particular highs and lows that you can share from the day?
Oh my God, the Matterhorn is like ingrained on my brain for the rest of my life.
Talk to me.
That was just epic. Just getting up to the Hornli Hut, which is this like Swiss alpine lodge that you stay at, kind of hostel vibe. And it's just like super luxurious. Like They don't have anything like that in North America. These mountain huts where you just sleep high and everything's taken care of, and you got beds and pillows and sheets and blankets and like all of this stuff, where normally you're carrying a tent and a pack and a, you know, whatever, and you got cooked meals. And so the Hornley Hut is like luxurious, first of all, which was cool. And you're just sitting there eating dinner the night before, you're looking up and you're like, we're here. Hornley Hut's at 10,000 feet. Matterhorn Summit's at 14,700 or 14,692. And so you're just there looking at it. And they have a really great helicopter rescue system in Switzerland and in the Alps in general. And so while we were there at having the dinner just that night, we're seeing like a helicopter rescue right off the mountain for some climbers who I guess are coming down a little late in the day. And, you know, so we see a rescue, they fly them down to the Hornley Hut, the helicopter lands, and you're just like, all right, I guess we're going there up there in a couple hours from now. So hope we're ready.
It's just part of that experience of being there. It's just normal.
It kind of is. It's kind of normalized. Yeah, wow. It was strange to me at first, but you get a little bit used to seeing them. And then the climb itself, it's like, all right, this is what we trained for. Go, go, go. You get up at 4 a.m. We were on trail by 5. And we had plans to be the front of the line. There were maybe 14 other climbing parties that day. And we somehow ended up starting at the back of the line. But Chris is a really epic guide. And, you know, we took a couple key passes and we ended second party to the summit, which was great. And we definitely were probably one of the latter parties down because we were up there dancing for an hour and a half. And
you take extra time to be at the summit, clearly.
A storm started coming in, and so the storm chased us down. Some precipitation started coming, you don't want to be on the rock so much when it's wet, definitely not when it's snowing. And it just kind of kept lowering us down the mountain. We just kept staying 100, 200 feet ahead of it. So the rock got a little bit wet on the way down, and it was like go time, but we slapped high fives when we made it back to the Hornley Hut, and we had done it.
Man, that's intense, man.
And just jamming Party Rock. I've always been a fan of the song Party Rock ever since it came out. The Party Rock video with all the like zombies everywhere dancing. I just thought that was like such an epic video. I've always loved that track. And so when I was thinking of song selection for Matterhorn, like what, you know, it was the only song that came to mind. I'm like, I gotta go Party Rock the Matterhorn. That was like part of the goal. And so then the song comes on and it opens with this like, you know, Party Rock's in the house tonight, and then it's like, whoo, like it gives a big like shout, and then you're just up there feeling free, and you're like, all right, let's go. You start running, man.
That song is such a party anthem, like it's so iconic. Random story real quick. So you know how what's the name of that song? Party Rock, right?
Yeah.
And that's by LMFAO. So I've actually partied at the LMFAO house, and Redfu was on the mic, like hyping up the crowd, because there's a dance crew called Quest Crew that's very good friends with LMFAO.
Okay.
So I remember being at their house.
Were you
in the Hollywood
breaking
Hills.
Breaking with them?
I wasn't breaking. They just throw all these like wild parties, like at their Hollywood Hills mansion. So it was just like once in a while they would invite like, you know, the dance community, the music community, and it was just like, oh my god, like this is that guy, it's Redfu, and like the other guy with the big poofy afro hair, and I was like, this is like out of a movie. So it was really
Redfoo,
cool when
Sky
I saw
Blue.
Use that song. Yeah, Sky Blue and Redfu.
Sick. Well, that sounds fun. Yeah, it's a pretty iconic track, and it feels good kicking it at the top of the Matterhorn to it. And then the shot came together. You know, the clouds started to come. The one thing that was super hard, and this is the thing about the summit, you never know what you're going to get. You never know if you can get the summit window. Then if you get up there, you never know if the terrain is going to even be danceable. So you put all this effort into trying to make it happen, and it's all a question mark. And then as soon as you get up there and you see the terrain, if it's danceable, you definitely get this like adrenaline pumping through, and you're like, all right, let's go. But then, you know, you got to set up the shot, right? So you got to get the drone up. You got to get a lot of things have to get, you got to change into your dance gear.
It's a lot of
so that you look like, you know,
involved.
Like you're ready to dance. And then the clouds were hanging out on one of the sides of the mountain. So we couldn't get one of the angles I wanted, but like you take what you can get, you know, you put up some shots. We all, you know, the weather came in and it was time to go. And I'm like, all right, I think we got it. Let's get out of here. And you never know if you got it until you go back after you look at the footage.
Oh my God.
Like, did we get it? I don't know.
You put all these countless weeks of preparation and then the actual day of the climb and all the logistics of prepping your gear and then the logistics of doing the shots. And you're like, I pray to the hiking gods that we got it, because it's all a big risk at the end of the day, what we're trying to do and capture these content pieces.
It is. You got to be able to hit the performance. Then you also got to video, like you got to get the shot from a camera and videography and audio. And like, I always bring redundant systems. So I'll always have two, anything mission critical, I'll have two of. Mm. So for example, like when I was on Pico d'Orizaba, we got to the top and my phone that I would normally run audio to my headphones from was like, I don't know, it was so cold and it was like not cracked physically, but like it was a bit broken. It took a while to warm up. So it wasn't working, but I always bring a backup audio device so I was able to still run the music. Smart. You got to download the files so that you're not, if you don't have connection, you can still stream your music or you can get access to your music. You got to have multiple cameras. You got to have, it's a lot of logistics.
This is here. A lot to like take in just the equipment logistics side already.
It's a third of it. You know, a third of it's climbing, a third of it's summit shuffling, and a third of it is videography and logistics management.
Damn, that's a lot.
That's what makes it such a fun project. You're like, it's so many different pursuits. And then you got to edit, you know, and it's a lot of different pursuits all rolled into one. And it's easy to develop a passion for kind of getting better at each of those things.
All right, Brett, yo, thanks so much for sharing those epic experiences on the Agui, Kroshu, Matterhorn. And I think you also mentioned Pico de, how do you pronounce it?
Pico d'Orizaba was the most recent one just in February just now.
And that's in Mexico. That's the largest...
Yes. Largest volcano in North America and largest highest point in Mexico as well at about 18.5.
I've always wanted to go peak bagging in Mexico. So that's now in my mind now.
They got a lot around there. I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun.
And not to get too
Orizaba,
deep into
Orizaba
it.
Orizaba Mountain Guides was incredible. Yeah. They got a whole great logistics systems there. So yeah.
Mexico so you had a different guide. It wasn't Christopher Erickson for that one, right?
No, it was not. It was my friend Juan Mendoza,
and it
was with Orizaba Mountain Guides.
And just to get into that story a bit, the Pico de Orizaba.
And while we're at it, I should probably shout out the other mountain guide I climb with a lot, Seth Timpano, who we climbed in Montana. We've been up Mount Baker together and done some ice climbing in Highlight Canyon.
These mountain guides, are these like friends of yours or do you find them on a website or is it a referral? Like how does that typically work?
More like referral based. You kind of get to climb with some people here and there and then you find, you know, great mountain guides who have a lot of good mountain and climbing capabilities and who also, you know, fun to hang out with and go summit shuffling with. So, cause it's kind of a unique project. So it's good to have people who are, you know, have a good energy about that as well.
And the mountain you did in Mexico, I believe the guy you're with saved someone's life or was it somebody else?
That was kind of sketchy. Yeah. So it was not Juan, it was another mountain guide, Arturo. We were two climbing parties with Orizaba mountain guides that were on the mountain climbing with like 1-to-1 guide climber ratio. And we were summit shuffling and this other party passed us and then they came down off the summit. And then when we came down, they had been in a bad fall they had fallen, the climber had fallen about 100 feet with the guide. So they both tumbled and like, I remember talking afterwards to Arturo, who it took him like 4 attempts with the ice axe to be able to arrest it because the conditions were so bare. There was like no snow. It was just a lot of brittle ice and rock. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, he explained that experience super scary. If it wasn't for his incredible expertise and skill set, like that might have been it. So that was, and just and the climber ended up like spraining or breaking his ankle. And so we stopped for a bit, they splinted it, and then the Mexican army happened to be doing training drills right around there. And so we got down and then I was just waiting, you know, to find out what to do. And then they send up like, I don't know, maybe like 50 to 70 people to kind of carry him on a thing, 10 people at a time, you know, a couple hundred feet at a time, and then they change parties all the way down.
Oh, the gurney thing, the wheelbarrow thing?
Not on wheels, on like 10 people holding like a person on a, like thing, you know, I don't know what they call that, but like a board.
It's always so intense when you witness a rescue on the mountain and it's your guide that's doing it. It's like, wait, I'm in the middle of a movie scene right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, that's the closest I've ever witnessed a pretty dangerous situation.
Man. Yeah. I just wanted to
bring
that up.
I'm just happy they were all right. I mean, that was like, they were all good spirits at the end back at the hostel, you know, everyone was feeling good, like to be back, but, definitely a scary experience.
Yeah. Mother Nature is so beautiful, but so humbling. You always got to treat it like a friend and a foe, right?
I don't know about a foe, but a friend and like I don't know. It's not a foe. It's like you're the foe. You know what I mean? Like you're the like.
It's
like
deep with that one.
It's your preparation and it's your capabilities and it's your. But like accidents can just happen. So yeah. You just got to be careful.
But I wanted to bring that up because I noticed that on one of your recent posts that your guide actually had to save somebody, and that's intense.
Yeah, that was a pretty intense experience.
And to transition now from, you know, all these stories on the different mountain peaks you've been on, you've clearly gained tons of knowledge and experience out in the mountains, the wilderness. And I just would love for you to share with our fellow trekkers, you know, what are some of the trekking tips and tricks that have greatly helped you out personally, whether it be long day hikes or for peak baggers or mountaineers that you can share with us?
Happy to share that. Actually, you know what, before we jump into that, there's one more sort of story I want to tell, which
Please
is connected to kind of like dangerous experiences on the mountain, which is what would be my own kind of most dangerous or like scariest experience that I've been through. And that was probably on Mount Whitney. The second time I climbed it, I expended so much energy and my pack weight was so high and it was snowing. So it ended up being like a 19.5 hour day on the mountain.
Wow.
And coming from, you know, up from sea level to 8,000 feet, and then I didn't sleep at all that night. And that's probably my biggest area for improvement in alpine climbing, is just being able to like learn how to sleep well at like high elevations. Because if I don't have energy and I'm fatigued, that's when things just, you know, cascade. And so, but I was determined, and I was carrying a 48-pound pack, and it was too heavy. So I take this pack up 6,000 feet, and I make it to the summit. And it was a pretty quiet day that day. There might have only been 3 to 5 other climbers, maybe 6 climbers max, that I saw during that summit session. Whereas the previous year I'd been there, there had been, maybe, I don't know, like 100 climbers up there, right? There's like a nice summer day. This was like a snow climb, and you know, starting at 9,000 feet of snow. So I put all this energy into the summit shuffle. I'm not acclimated. I'm like heavy breathing and gasping in between my takes. It's like what you see on camera versus what you see behind was like not pretty that day. But anyways, I get it done. I get a shot I'm happy with. I'm like my last battery. And I finally say, okay, now I got to climb down 6,000 feet. I put on my pack. The adrenaline kind of wears off, and I get about 100 feet off the summit, and I almost like crash. I'm like, my body's like, you're done. No more climbing today. And I'm still 6,000. I'm still at 5,000 feet,
so
and storm is starting to come in. You know, and it's like there's lightning risk up there on that ridge. You don't want to be up there when there's like precipitation coming in. And I had to tell myself, like, it doesn't matter what, like, you have to put one foot after the other right now and get off this ridge line. Get, you know, or it's going to be trouble. So, and that was a pretty scary experience because I really felt fully done, fully out of energy, as if I had gone like into that risk zone, out of my comfort zone.
Mm.
So I kept going and I made it down. I was like, just get off the ridge line. If anything, if you need a nap or camp, once you get down to 12,000 feet off that main ridge, like back at trail camp, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But just get off the ridge. So finally I get down, I get off the ridge, I make it to the 12,000 feet. And then I'm like, all right, I can just keep, at this point I can keep slogging through this next 4,000 feet of snow, but at least I'm a little bit more safe. And when I was climbing with Chris, he had a great, you know, analogy, which is like, when you start climbing, there's two jars, and you have a jar of luck and a jar of experience, and your jar of luck is full and your jar of experience is empty. And as you go through each of these experiences and as you learn every lesson, you take a stone from the jar of luck and you put it in the jar of experience.
Mm.
And so as you keep climbing and you go through these types of things, your jar of luck starts to run out and your jar of experience starts to become much more full. And so you have to identify these situations and use your jar of experience to prevent yourself from needing to use your luck as you continue in your climbing career. And I felt that that resonated so well with me that, you know, the concept of like taking these experiences and really learning from them and trying to prevent those types of things from happening again, mm-hmm. really, really, you know, sat with me after that.
Yeah, that, man, that's a really dramatically intense Mount Whitney experience. I would have been extremely humbled because, to your point, it's so difficult to get any kind of sleep on those big climbs. Like, you're so restless. You feel like it's like Christmas morning, you know? You're so anxious but excited, and like all of that mixed together, and also just at higher altitudes, it's just hard to sleep. Like, it's a real thing. It's a really hard thing to tackle, you know?
And I had a similar problem at Pico de Orizaba. I couldn't sleep at all at 14,000 feet at Pico de Orizaba, so I acclimated well. You go to Mexico City, sleep there for 2 nights at 7,000, get up to Orizaba Mountain Guide, sleep there for 2 nights at 10,000. All of that was kind of all right, but then as soon as I got up to 14,000 to sleep for 2 nights, I couldn't acclimate. I couldn't sleep very well. It was so cold. And so I did Pico de Orizaba on no sleep for, I don't know, like 48 hours. It's crazy what your body can do, but the summit shuffle was hard. It was because I got up there,
yeah.
And I was 1,000% adrenaline was it. I had like no energy, but like as soon as we got up there and it was danceable, I'm like, all right, I'm going to bring this if I can bring it.
Yeah. For the listeners, when you see us dance, and it's, although it may be for like 15 seconds, 30 seconds, it really feels like a 100-yard sprint.
100%.
Like, when we're done dancing, we are depleted. And after the climb, like, those two combined, it is not a good recipe, especially if you're on, like, a 14,000-foot, 18,000-foot mountain, because you're at such high acclimation, there's less oxygen, just so all these variables mixed together is, like, this is kind of not looking good when you think, when you start observing your body.
Yeah, that's why the sleep and the fatigue and the nutrition and the hydration is everything, really. Mm-hmm. We can get into like tips and all that next for how I think about what I've learned from that. But
yeah, let's get into that.
Like for the next thing that I climb, if I'm trying to do anything at that elevation or higher, I've just to really continue to respect the acclimation process. Like it takes 10 days for you to acclimate.
10
and
days,
have
okay.
Those blood cells actually let you breathe easy, especially if you're trying to do high intensity cardio at elevation. So I think just continuing to, like, sometimes you'll see an itinerary for an expedition and think, does it really need to be 20 days or 18 days or 15 days? And then you ask yourself, you're like, well, what have I learned? It's like, yeah, if you do try to rush it in a week, you might get there, you might not be acclimated, you might not be able to dance. You might go do this in 12 days and get up there and just be beat. It's better to do it in 16 days and be able to like have energy and feel good. Because when I feel good, nothing's better than feeling good at the summit than being acclimated. And Mount Whitney, I was well acclimated. Matterhorn, I was well acclimated. Like we did the week process to get up to 14,000 feet. And by the time I got up there, I was like, I'm feeling good. We can dance. We're good. I got energy. And that's a very different feeling than being like, I can't dance right now, but I'm going to try. Let's put the camera up.
I'm going to force it and pass out right afterwards.
It's a different vibe for sure. And you get both of them sometimes.
Yeah, nothing, no better feeling than being on the summit, feeling good in the neighborhood up there.
Yeah, exactly.
And to go back to the, what are some of those trekking tips or tricks that have greatly helped you out personally that you can share with, you know, people in the community?
Well, I think we kind of just touched on it, which is, you know, fatigue, nutrition, and hydration, and pack weight. I guess those are kind of the things I think the most about now. Like actual exercise capability, cardio or muscular or technique, like that just naturally builds over time. So everyone's just gonna, you know, you kind of push yourself and you keep pushing yourself. But the logistical side of that is like, do I have water? Do I have energy? Do I have nutrition? Do I have the right fuel sources, which is sleep. Sleep is a fuel source. Am I putting myself in a position to win? And that's probably some of the biggest tips I have, are just making sure you have that like well planned out.
And I think you also mentioned when we were scaling up the steep ridge here, there's a particular piece of outdoor gear that you think is a game changer too.
Oh, trekking poles. Yeah, I'm a big fan of trekking poles. I'll take them everywhere, especially because I carry a heavy pack with me. I'll always have like 15 to 18 extra pounds of summit shuffle gear than like climbers would typically have on them. So like if you're going to descend 4,000 feet, big fan of trekking poles. I'll see climbers a lot without trekking poles and I'm like, you don't need to do that to your knees.
Exactly. It's like, you don't got to prove anything to anybody. Like, if you don't use it on the way up, like you said, at least use it on the way down, because we want to have longevity in the trekking game. We don't need to destroy our knees going down 4,000 to 7,000 feet of elevation gain, because a lot of these climbs, the terrain is really rocky, loose dirt and scree. Like, one really bad slip and you like blow out your knee, like you don't want that to happen. You'll be depressed once that kind of injury happens,
especially if you're carrying 30 or 40 pounds.
That's
of like
point,
you're
yeah.
training for anything. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just a fan for sure.
Yeah, and also on the way down is when like we let our guard down too, because we expended a lot of the energy on the climb and we're like, oh, we're coasting down, but like that's only half the day. That's half
so
of the mission.
True. I feel like my navigation capabilities go down a little bit on the descent. I feel like on the way up, it's trail wayfinding is like a lot more simple, and then on the way down, and sometimes I'll just take like a little offshoot and then be like, what am I doing here? Like now I gotta retrace my steps. So yeah, I know what you mean. You do let your guard down a little bit on the descent.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for sharing all the tips and tricks and also the hiking poles. I think hiking poles are a game changer. They're not just for old people. They're for everybody. They're also just fun to have and swing around. Not at each other, but, you know, maybe if you need to protect yourself from someone or an animal. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. But right now, I want to get into another adventure that we've been chatting about. It was the thing that first caught my attention from your content, obviously, was the summit shuffling, the dance journey. Like your shuffle dance journey in Los Angeles, like how did this all happen again? Like, if you can get more in depth about that, and like how you've just fused this love of dance and the outdoors and on the mountain peaks. Like, could you just get into the story of how this all like really came together for yourself?
Yeah, so I kind of told the like a bit about that earlier on, which is I got back from my friend Mike's wedding, and then I went to a beginner shuffle class, mm-hmm. and I happened to be climbing Mount Whitney, you know, a couple weeks later, and said, hey, can I put this together? A funny story. So I go to this beginner shuffle class, and then I was like, okay, I can do this a little. I got a running man move. I got this. And I decide somehow I get persuaded to go, or I decide to go to this next class. It's like an advanced class, like a week later. I'm like, okay, let's see how this goes. And all these like incredible advanced dancers show up to this class. And then I'm like, I'm really out of my element here. And about 5 minutes into the class, a videographer shows up, and they're like, all right, everybody, we're going to film the whole class. And
oh,
I'm like,
no.
Oh my God. Like, I need to learn how to dance right here, right now. And so I don't know. I did my best. It was rough. I felt really out of my element. And then after that, then it was like 2 weeks later, I was climbing Mount Whitney, and I kind of felt like, all right, do I just give up and like never do this again? Mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. do I just try to kind of like, I needed to bounce back from that. So that's when I did that Mount Whitney climb, and I got the summit shuffle. And then after that, I tried it, you know, once more, and then once again. And then after I hit three, then I was like, all right, I'm in. Let's do this.
Wow. Yeah, because I see you take dance classes in Hollywood now, and like you're pretty active, and you're a part of like different like choreo, like with like tons of other dancers, like sometimes 10 to 20. And like I saw you wearing like a cowboy outfit, like it was all themed and everything.
Yeah, well, Gravity is a pretty epic studio that opened up in Hollywood. Mary Grace opened up that studio, and it's like a shuffle dedicated studio. Mm. And so that's specifically for the shuffle community. You can get beginner, intermediate, advanced shuffle classes there. And so that's kind of where you'll see a lot of those classes happening. And since I live like so close to it, it's not hard for me to get out there on weeknights and train and pick up these skills. I love getting out there and just working on my shuffle moves and kind of like building the shuffle skill and the climbing skill at the same time, you know, and then see where I can get, you know, see what summits I can get to.
And it's such incredible cardio, right? Because in comparison to like bagging peaks, which is like a lot of like long endurance, these shuffle dance classes, or even like for myself when I was learning breakdancing, it's a lot of like, it feels like max interval training, you know, like it's, you're going hard for like a minute and then you're breaking. You're going hard for a minute and then you're breaking, and then you're learning new moves. So it's like, I feel like that's really awesome that you have these two physical outlets for yourself.
Yeah, it's great. I like to get, you know, a lot of exercise, and it helps me stay fit between climbing too, because I find I used to like, okay, I'd plan a big climbing trip and have to train for that climb more, you know, it's not uncommon. Okay, I put the pack on, go train mm-hmm. for the climb. Now I find I just try to keep my fitness up so I don't hike and then like plateau valley, and you know, I kind of just hike and then try to stay up there in between with all the cardio training so that I don't need to rebuild that base when I go on another climb.
And also, when you go in these classes and you meet people in the community, these different members, and you become friends with them, and they then see your content of you shuffling on the mountain, like what is their like reaction towards like seeing this dramatic fusion of the dance that they're learning, or that they're a professional at, or that they love being fused with these dramatic mountainscapes?
I don't know. I think it's the same as anyone's reaction, you know, just if it looks cool, and you know, people seem to like the summit shuffle shots, and I'd say it seems to be pretty good.
And what you say was that interesting analogy of how they view you, and like how the dancers view you in the mountain community, and how the mountaineering community views you as a dancer.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about summit shuffling before, and I was like, the dance community views me as like a beginner dancer, beginner intermediate dancer, and the mountain community views me as a beginner intermediate mountain climber. But like, to a dance community, I may be like a more advanced mountaineer. And to
yes,
the
sure,
mountain
sure.
community, I may be a more advanced dancer. So it's kind of this weird intersection of two fully separate communities mm-hmm. that I just happen to have a passion for both, and like try to intersect and like bring it to the summit, you know, which is why I think you have an interesting story too, because I know you have been a breaker for a long time mm-hmm. and you also are a peak bagger and a hiker now and a climber. So I feel like I've seen you summit cipher. Like, I didn't know this. And you sent me your Mount Baldy summit cipher.
Yes.
And I was like, I was jaw dropped. I'm like, this is so epic. I love it.
Yeah. I was like, I wonder if he even knows that we also mountain dance too, or a summit cipher, summit shuffle. Yeah, that piece of content I sent you of West Baldy was like you said, like you spend so much energy to get to the top, and you just hope you feel good, and when you do, you put all your energy out there into the universe, and you just share your gift with each other.
So we're going to have to hit a Baldy Cypher session at some point. But I know before that, we're going to be having a Wisdom Tree Summit Cypher session that we'll be able to get in there.
We're thinking third week of May, right?
I think that's right.
Third week of May, right before sunset. You don't want to miss it, so stay tuned on both of our socials. We'll probably add a link in our bio in the next couple of weeks, right?
We're going to have a Summit Cypher. We're going to have music. We're going to have dancing. We're going to have some, like, breaking community coming through. We're going to have some shuffling community coming through.
Oh, I'm so excited
right
now.
It's going to be a half-hour climb.
Let's get it.
Just Trek plus Summit Shuffler. We got this.
You guys don't want to miss it. It's a collaboration between two mountain lovers and two mountain dancers. Like, I mean, that sells itself, in my opinion.
There you go.
And when you do the dancing and you do the mountain climbing, you know, like, how does each fulfill you separately? And then when you fuse the two, like, how does it fulfill you as one? I'm curious to know that. Like, when you dance, well, like, what part of your life would you say that really, like, it satisfies or fulfills?
I mean, dancing is, a great creative outlet. You know, you can, I grew up trying different types of arts and things, and to be able to find an expressive art to good music that really lets you, it's high cardio intensity, so I used to run a lot, and now I don't run anymore, I just dance, and I find it's
even
like,
better.
Yeah, it's just a more fun way to be creative and expressive, and I think climbing fulfills a need for, like, solitude and peacefulness, but there's also climbing community out there as well. And the need to, like, push limits, I feel, is found in both, actually. So when you bring them together and you think about, okay, how can I climb this new peak and hit a more advanced choreo or session? And sometimes you gotta, you know, it might be an easier peak, I can hit a more difficult dance challenge. Or if it's gonna be a harder summit, I might need to reduce the dance technicality because my legs are gonna be more spent.
True. Mm-hmm.
And so just trying to, you know, it's kind of like I've made my own greatest challenge for myself, and to be able to now do that and enjoy it is just like, it's fun.
You look like you're having the time of your life up there, man. When you're belayed to the other person on a 19,000 foot peak, I'm like, I want to feel that one day.
Haven't been up to 19 yet. Maybe one of these days, we'll see.
Well, it looks like you're up there to all of us that don't know.
I guess 18.5 is pretty close.
We can round up, right? We can round up. And I now want to transition into, you know, I know we've been talking about California a lot in the mountains here, and you obviously have a stint also living in Seattle. So what I'm curious to know from living a handful of years in Seattle before moving to LA, because I think you've been out here now, what, 2-3 years?
About that.
2-3 years. Like, from living in the Pacific Northwest and moving down here, like, what aspects of each outdoor scene do you love that the other may lack?
That's a good question. I think so what Seattle has and what the Northwest has is Mount Rainier, Mount Baker. I mean, Seattle is kind of like the epicenter of American mountain climbing because of Mount Rainier.
Ooh, what a
and
line.
The ability to train there, the ability to climb there. That's a real global peak. You'll see, you know, you have the draw of bringing beginners into mountain climbing and the groups that'll take beginners up there. And then you have training, you know, capabilities on that mountain as well. And then you'll have expedition training to go to Denali. And so Mount Rainier is like the core of American mountain climbing. And so that's what Seattle has. And I'd say what SoCal has that's actually uniquely special is really Mount Baldy, because you have, within a day trip, the ability to get up to 10,000 feet, the ability to hit a snow bowl, and you can't get up to 10,000 feet on a non-technical ascent in the Northwest. Right? Mount Baker is gonna be 10,007, but like you're doing glacier travel then, and you're roped up, and same with Mount Rainier. So your day hikes, like your Mailbox Peak and your Mount Si, which are epic, are gonna get you up to maybe, I don't know, 4,000 or 6,000 feet. You still get 4,000 feet again. So from that sense, Mount Baldy is just like the SoCal gateway where you get access to non-technical hikes, and then you're maybe going to try a technical climb, and you know, you might not be roped up, or you get your crampons and your ice axe, and you're going to go hit the bowl in the winter, and depending on the conditions. So, and it's an alpine start. You got to get up at 3:30 in the morning. You got to get on there by 5. You got to get off the bowl by 8:30 in the morning before the sun comes up. So it's a real training day here. You don't quite have that access in Seattle to the same type of like day climb.
Yeah, you actually mentioned the hike I've been wanting to do in Seattle, Mailbox Peak.
Oh, Mailbox is the stuff legends are made of.
I heard it's a nice leg buster. It's like 4,000 gain in like 7 miles, 7-8 miles.
It's like 4,000 feet of what we just did to get up here.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, this is what we do, like 600 feet, 800 feet to get up here. It was probably like at least, you know, that first ascent.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 4,000 foot of like, you know, one-to-one climbing.
Yeah, I know it's like one of the hardest day hikes in, I guess, near the Seattle.
That's what
city.
You train for Mount Rainier.
Really?
Go hit laps on Mailbox. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's another thing that Seattle has, which is nice. They got, but I guess you have like pretty incredible mountain access here too. But I was going to say Mount Si and Mailbox Peak are 30 minutes from you in the city, and you're getting a really beautiful 4,000 foot again climb. But you also have that around here too. You got Santa Monica Mountains. You got a lot you can do out here as well.
You mentioned Mount Si. Actually, I've done Little Si. That's where I first saw my visual of majestic white mountain goats.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my God, have you seen them up there?
I have not seen mountain goats on Little Si. That's cool though. I actually have this dream where I'm dancing with mountain goats and like they're somehow in the shot. Like I'll be at a summit and mountain goats come up behind and I stare at them and they stare at me and there's like an understanding and I'm filming and then I start dancing and they're in the background just like dancing also.
Backup dancers?
Yeah.
This is going to happen. The fact that we're talking about it's going
to
manifest.
Exactly. I need to manifest that shot one day.
Oh my God, that'd be so epic. And just to go back to Mount Baldy, thank you for showing so much love to our dear Mount Baldy. Like, yeah, like what you said, like to be able to do a mountain like this and not have it be technical, especially in like the summertime. Obviously, it's technical in the winter. I remember when I was in Seattle, like you can't just go anywhere in the wintertime. There's avalanche dangers on the road. And I'm like, oh, that's right. It's kind of different in the upper left USA.
It's a little different. It's different vibes, but both have their strengths and you know, both can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's I always love that dichotomy of Pacific Northwest and SoCal because they both have their pros and cons in different seasons. I want to ask you a more broad question right now as it relates to your outdoor journey. Like, just how has scaling these epic mountains just impacted your overall life, would you say?
Well, you definitely get a sense of like accomplishment and that you're doing something and that you're not just, you know, sitting on the couch. So it's nice to get out there and climb big peaks and know that you're able to do it and to summit shuffle them and get this great memento of content and this dance. And then to also have that memory of dancing on this peak ingrained in your memory is something I'll carry with me for my lifetime. You know, I can still recall how I felt on different peaks, not just what happened, but like actually how I was feeling, what my headspace was. And it's not always pretty, but sometimes, but there's some moments where you're in the zone and there's some moments when you're like, oh my God, this is hard. But it's just so memorable. And I think that's impacted me in a lot in the sense that it's allowed me to focus on my passions and develop like this fun kind of challenge and purpose. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
And when you're not doing these epic mountains and peak bagging, like what do you do outside of it besides also the dance?
You know, these things take up a lot of my time, right? Summit shuffling and dancing and climbing and other than that, gym, and I like to snowboard now and then and play guitar when I can. So these are kind of my hobbies. And then of course, work takes some time as well. But yeah, I'd say summit shuffling has definitely began to consume a very large percentage of my recreational time.
And I support it. We all support you for that, please.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, I know the not only the dance community, but the hiking outdoor community, especially down here. Like, because, you know, especially in Los Angeles, we just love, like, entertainment and good performances. Like, that's how I view, like, your content. I'm like, dude, this is a show. Like, sometimes I'm just ready to get my popcorn in my room. Like, let me see what Summit Shuffler got something going on in his feed.
I love it. I'm going to keep shuffling. I'm going to keep bringing you that content and those dance moves.
Is there a particular summit shuffle objective in the near future you can share, or do you want to keep that under wraps?
You know, I got one or two that, one on the schedule and another one I'm trying to think about after that, but in typical fashion, I will keep it DL until I drop the video, because, you know, you may get it, you may not, so.
That's true. You'll keep the Mission Trek Impossible under wraps.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I'm super excited to ask you this next question as you just have so many countless outdoor adventures.
I got stories.
I know you have too many. We're going to have to do a part two with you at some point. But if there is one hiking or outdoor experience that you could relive all over again for yourself, what would that be for you?
I mean, we've talked about it a lot today, but Matterhorn is just, that whole week in the Alps was something super special.
Yeah.
The amount of climbs that you can hit, the elevation in the Alpine that you can get, and then just be back in the village at a bakery getting a croissant like in France the next morning. You know, it's just really cool, that climbing community there. And I'd say culminating in that Matterhorn climb and you're looking at Switzerland on one side, you're looking at small Italian village on the other side, and you're just up here and you got exposure and you got, you know what, getting the moment when I got to the summit and we saw the snowpack ridge, because it was this very thin, maybe 12 foot by 2 feet ridge that had just been melted down with enough boot pack, because if it's too powdery, you really can't dance on fluffy snow. But it was like, and if there's no snow, then you got a lot of rock, jaggedy rock, and that ridge in particular might not have been danceable. But it had this like 2 foot high by 2 foot by, it was like the perfect weather. And the moment we got there and answered the question, this is danceable, I was just like,
let's go baby.
We got it, let's put the bird up, let's go get this. And just that whole next hour was like, in some ways it was a blur and I don't remember anything, and then in other ways I remember like every moment and what I was looking at and how it all went down.
Oh, that's so rad, man. Matterhorn Ridge, for the record,
that's the one, man. That's the one until the next one. Actually, no, I mean, that'll always be the one, but then maybe can you go get more of the experiences is the question.
You're one and only.
Like Pico de Orizaba was great too. Being up there and looking at that caldera of the volcano up close, that thing is huge. I don't even know. It's like a couple hundred feet across, like this giant volcano. And but I was so fatigued that was actually a more difficult experience than Matterhorn, from a summit shuffling perspective. But Matterhorn, everything just hit. Some days it all hits and you're like, sick.
All right, guess what?
What's up?
It's time for the rapid fire question section.
Okay, let's do it. So I better hydrate. Remember, hydration
first.
And nutrition will keep you nice and healthy on this summit that we're on.
There you go. Yeah, I'm gonna sip some water too. So the way it works, there's two rounds. First round is outdoor focus, and then the second round is personal. So just answer with one word answers.
One word
short
answers.
And concise answers.
Okay, wait, hold on. Reread the rules. Are these one-word answers or are they short and concise?
It depends on the question.
Okay.
That's why. That's why it's either one-word answers or short and concise.
Okay.
So,
I'll use my best judgment.
There you go.
Okay.
All right, round one. You ready?
Let's do it.
You ready, rock steady?
Ready, rock steady.
Oh, he said it, baby.
Drop the question because I'm ready.
Favorite trail snack?
Cliff bar gels.
Trail runners or hiking boots?
Hiking boots.
Desert or deserted island?
Deserted island.
Waterfalls or lakes?
Waterfalls.
Rock scrambling or surfing loose scree?
Rock scrambling.
Epic day hike or epic backpacking trip?
Epic backpacking trip.
Favorite camping meal?
What are those Pro Peak ones? The Pro Peak brand and which one? I couldn't even tell you. There's a couple good ones that are by Peak Performance. I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah. Peak Performance breakfasts are pretty good too.
Peak Performance, for the record. Hardest hike you've done?
Technical or non, like climb technical or
let's do one for each, non-technical and technical.
Hardest hike. Ooh, where do you draw the line though? Hardest hike.
What's one that like snatched your soul?
I guess hardest hike would be the first Mount Whitney, non-technical switchbacks to the top, no snow, all the way up, all the way back. That was a hard, long day.
Oh, was that the day with no sleep?
No, that was the next year. And that was a snow ascent after that. Okay. Yeah, the no snow, but that's like a long hike. That'll, yeah. Mount Whitney, year one.
Dawn or dusk?
Dusk.
Mountain lions or grizzly bears?
Neither.
You gotta choose one if you had to.
To look at on a computer screen or to come across in the wilderness?
To come across in the wilderness.
Mountain lion.
You're brave, my friend. Dog poodle bush or poison oak?
I don't even know what either of those are. A poison oak, I guess, is like actually, what's the first one?
Dog poodle bush is like, it's what grows after like burn areas. It looks like very like, it smells like weed.
Is it poisonous?
It's just more like, not necessarily poisonous, but like you'll get a pretty bad itch and rash.
I actually don't know enough to answer that question.
Good answer. Taco Tuesday or Waterfall Wednesday?
What's Taco Tuesday? Just like getting tacos on a Tuesday?
Yeah, it's like it's a whole thing here,
and
especially in the States.
What's Waterfall Wednesday?
Yeah, just it's a day where everyone posts content of Waterfall Wednesday.
I'm gonna go with Waterfall Wednesday.
I like how you're like genuinely like, what's Taco Tuesday?
I liked waterfalls, as you know, over lakes.
There you go. All trails or Gaia GPS?
All trails.
Santa Monica Mountains or San Gabriel Mountains?
San Gabriel.
San Gabriel Mountains or Eastern Sierras? Ooh, gotta get you with that one.
Eastern Sierra. For what?
Just what are you leaning towards at the moment? Like, what's in your heart at the moment?
I guess the sand. I can't answer that one. That's like, which one do I choose, you know?
It's like choosing between kids.
I guess San Gabriel. No, Eastern Sierra. It's got to go to the Eastern Sierra.
Okay, Eastern Sierra, for the record. Favorite international mountain at the moment?
That I've climbed or?
That you've climbed.
That would be Matterhorn.
Matterhorn. Music artist you want to hike with?
Anybody who's down to Summit Shuffle, actually.
Any particular DJs you're like, yo, that would be super dope to...
Actually, you know what? Laidback Luke made a joke about getting a DJ booth up on top of, like, an ice climb. And so maybe him. If he wanted to come we bring, like, a DJ gear and hit that, that would be kind of cool.
And Laidback Luke, if I remember correctly, is Filipino, too.
I don't know.
And I'm Filipino, so cool. Anyways, favorite wildlife to observe?
Snow leopard.
You've seen snow leopards?
Well, no, that I have observed or that it would be cool to see.
I guess I never really clarified that, but yeah, snow leopard sounds pretty epic.
It's rare to come across a snow leopard.
Favorite type of landscape in nature at the moment?
I'm gonna go with mountains.
That would make sense. Greatest fear on the trail?
Objective hazard of all kinds.
Favorite piece of outdoor gear you own?
This sun hoodie.
Sun hoodies, I'm a fan of, I'm a convert. The sun hoodies are, they're incredible, especially for all like the mountain peak bagging.
Yep, or my outdoor research gloves, like my thin gloves that are sun protectors too. Anything that keeps me like fully covered from the elements.
National park you want to visit the most that you have not already?
If I'm being honest, I don't have a huge national park list because most of the mountains that I want to climb are more like, it's more peak focused for me than park focused.
Sure.
So I actually don't have a national park that I'm like that I have to go see next.
Okay. I respect that. Favorite outdoor brand at the moment?
Who do I give that to?
I know there's so many ways to go about it.
I mean, for sure, it's Arc'teryx.
Yeah.
Black Diamond fan as well.
Nice. Arc'teryx and Black Diamond.
I like La Sportiva and Scarpa as well. But I'd say, yeah, Arc'teryx is probably the clothing brand for outdoors. For fabrics, it's hard to beat.
In one word, how does hiking make you feel?
Peaceful.
What's your ideal outside temperature?
What time of day? Any time of day.
Just any time of day.
75 degrees.
That's why you moved to SoCal, baby. All right, that concludes round one. We'll take a quick 10-second break. We'll sip the water again.
I got more.
Keep
bringing it.
Round two.
The rapid fire is kind of a fun
spin.
It puts
you on your toes.
Yeah, that's good.
Rapid fire. It's also known as lightning rounds as well.
Lightning rounds, yep.
All right, round two. You ready?
Let's go.
You ready, rock steady?
Ready, rock steady.
Favorite comfort food?
On trail, like outdoors?
Just in general. Like you're at home. You don't got one?
I don't know if I have. I like apples. Like apples are my like
Honeycrisp apples.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Apples for the record. I never got that answer. Yep. Awesome. Favorite cartoon show growing up?
South Park.
Oh my God. Hell yeah. Favorite emoji?
Ooh. The shoe emoji, because I always drop the shoe in the mountain. And, well, the mountain emoji. Actually, my favorite emoji stream would be mountain shoe, representing Summit Shuffling.
Yeah, the white sneaker.
Yeah.
The tilted up. What's your hidden talent?
I don't have any hidden talents. I wear my talents on my sleeve, so you've seen them all.
What genre or type of music gets you dancing the most right now?
EDM.
EDM?
House music.
Any particular artist in the EDM world that you're like, it's on repeat right now?
You know, I like to hit the Mint playlist and see what's dropping there. I like, you know, quite a lot of artists.
App you're currently using the most besides Instagram?
Oh. probably... Let's think. Spotify.
Spotify, nice. Favorite superhero?
Not really a comic guy.
No comic guy?
Yeah.
You don't lean towards anyone? No Batman, no...
Not a comic, not a comic, Wolverine. not a Marvel franchise person.
No DC?
Nope.
All your superheroes are the probably, Mountaineers.
Yeah, like, I don't know, a really great climber.
How about that? Who's someone in the Mountaineer community that is either a great inspiration to you or that you consider as, like, a superhero to you?
I mean, it's kind of tough. There's a lot of good ones to name. I don't have any in particular that I'd say, like, that person is, like, the superhero. I just think anybody climbing at an expert level and doing really great things is really impressive. And same for dancing. Anybody dancing at an expert level, I find really impressive as well.
I like that answer. If you could be any animal, what would you be?
Probably, like, a mountain goat.
Yes! That's the best answer. That's exactly what I would want to be. I mean, we live that lifestyle, essentially, right?
Yeah, just, like, hop around on the summits.
I just love how they're, like, on, like, two-inch ledges, and they're just, like, casually, like, skipping. I'm like, that's the life right there.
It's the hooves, you know? They kind of just, like, perch, like, on the rock, like, little, like, rock climbing grips.
It's literally dancing on the wall. I'm like, this is so graceful and so beautiful.
That's what I'm saying. They'd be really incredible backup mountain dancers. Like, I just want that to happen.
This is going to happen. We're going to figure out the framing and everything and the whole shot. If you could travel back in time, what period would you go to? It could also be a period of time that you haven't lived.
I'm more of a futurist than a past kind of person. So, I don't know.
You don't want to live in like the 70s or the 80s, the Michael Jackson era?
No, if I was going to go for it, I'd probably go pretty far back. I'd probably go, like, maybe, you know, a couple hundred years ago. Maybe I'd even go to, like...
Prehistoric.
Yeah, yeah. Like, let's go 10,000. Let's go, like, 100,000 years ago.
Holy shit.
The
okay,
advent
okay.
of, like, villages and farming. Like, you know, that would be...
I love that,
like, whoa,
answer.
We can plant stuff? I mean, that's technology.
When people were literally just living off the land.
Yep.
Yeah. The primitive days. Describe yourself in 3 words.
The Summit Shuffler.
I don't think I've had anyone answer that question as their identity. I love that. That's great. All right, here's the final question of the rapid fire question section. You ready?
I don't know. Lightning round 2's been hard. Let's see it. Bring it.
Favorite sound? And take a moment to process that if you want.
Summit silence.
And we're going to bask in that. And that's what we just did right now. Beautiful answer. All right. Well, that concludes the rapid fire question section. You survived.
I made it.
Right? All right. Check it out, everyone. We're pretty much at the end of the episode. But before we conclude it, I always turn the spotlight back to the guests. Brett, Summit Shuffler, do you have any final words you want to share? The floor is yours.
Keep climbing, keep dancing, you know, get out there, push your limits, have fun with it, stay hydrated, and, you know, you too can mountain dance. So if you have any interest in taking some dance classes or learning some moves, come get out there. We're going to summit, you know, we're going to be having our Summit Cypher session midweek in, or middle of May. So I'm pretty
Correct,
excited
yeah.
for that. So you can come out here and, you know, I guess just do you, you know, life's all about doing you. And it's like, if you come across something fun and exciting that you have particular passion for, just go get it. That's my advice.
I love that last piece. Go get it. And that concludes another Just Trek podcast episode. Brett Patrontash, AKA Summit Shuffler, has been such an honor to have you ever since I saw that first piece of content of you, shuffling on one of the major peaks internationally. I was like, man, we gotta get him on the pod. And the fact that he's a dancer, like, there's just too much overlap and too much same energy that we have to get him onto the podcast. So thank you for being on the show. It's been so much fun to have you up here and to do it out in Mother Nature. You know, I've only done a few of these episodes, like, out in the wilderness, and we're, like, actually at a peak right now. We're on Cahuenga Peak, and we earned our way to get up here to bless you all with this conversation. So thank you again, Brett. Just Trek Podcast, Elevation is our recreation. Brett, AKA Summit Shuffler.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Appreciate it.
You did it, baby.
Let's go.
Good stuff. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good stuff, man.
Just Trek crew, Just Trek fam. Another outdoor banger of an episode that my body truly felt after recording because we trekked up a steep trail to the peak that we also descended down. And on top of that, we had a Summit Cypher dance session, which was so much damn fun, but also incredibly energy depleting. It felt so good to dance on the peak once again, as I felt that it's been a while since I've done that. So thank you, Brett. Thank you, Summit Shuffler, for the inspiration and Summit session. There really isn't a better feeling than dancing on top of a mountain out in Mother Nature. And it was just so special to meet up with a fellow mountain dancer, conversate, and share stories with one another. So many great moments throughout the episode, but I really loved how dance added even more purpose to Brett's life and peak bagging journey. That's what it's about, finding things you love that make you feel alive each and every day. And if you can combine those passions such as the outdoors and dance, my goodness, your soul and spirit is just going to ascend so high. Can't wait to keep following Brett's outdoor adventures and see which places he will summit shuffle next. If you enjoyed this episode and found value in it, support and subscribe to us on patreon.com/justtrek. You can find the link in our bio. The support really does help a lot to keep this show running for you and the community. Also, while you're at it, take a screenshot on whatever streaming platform you are currently listening on and tag us on Instagram at just.trek. That is JUST TREK. I would love to see who is tuning in, and it also helps with spreading awareness about the episode so that others in the community can tune in as well. In other words, keep on spreading the love. Also, if you happen to be listening on the Spotify app, I highly encourage you to answer the question and poll on there that is located at the bottom of the episode page. And with that all being said, let's get into our official outro. Thank you, gracias and salamat, for tuning in to the entire episode. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe and leave a review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts /iTunes. Follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are streaming on all the major platforms. If you want to send me a message, email justtrekofficial@gmail.com or slide in my DMs on Instagram at just.trek or on my personal at justrock, JUSTROC. If you would like to support my creative endeavors, check out the merch store on justtrek.net/shop. For more outdoor inspiration, make sure to check out our website. We have blogs, vlogs, and trip reports. I hope you enjoyed the episode, have a wonderful day, and please remember to just keep on trekking.